Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th day of May, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, get off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. While Apple's Macs are less targeted by malware than Windows PCs, concerning Mac malware does pop up regularly. This week, there's new Mac malware out there in the wild that Mac users should be aware of, called Atomic Mac OS Stealer, or AMOS. The malware was found originally on Telegram. A Telegram user was selling access to the malware, which is designed to steal sensitive information like usernames and passwords. Whoever designed the Atomic Mac OS Stealer is working behind the scenes to improve it and add new functionality to make it more effective. In the current incarnation, AMOS is able to access keychain password system information, files from the desktop and document folders, and the passwords of the Mac. So, everything, basically.
Yeah, literally.
It is able to infiltrate browser apps like Chrome and Firefox, extracting autofill information, passwords, cookies, wallets, and credit card information. Crypto wallets like Electrum, Binance, and Atomic are specific targets. AMOS can be purchased with a web panel that makes it easy to manage malware targets, so you don't have to actually be smart, along with tools for brute forcing private keys. The malware and accompanying services to make it easier to use against victims can be purchased on Telegram for $1,000 a month, which sounds like a lot of money, but you can make 100 times that if you know what you're doing when you use it. A .dmg file is used to get the malware on a victim's machine, and once installed, it immediately begins accessing sensitive information and sending it to a remote server. A fake system prompt is presented to get access to the system password, and it asks for access to files in the documents and desktop folders. Because this requires a user to click on a .dmg file to install, which isn't really a deterrent, apparently, for so many people, Mac users can avoid the malware by not installing any kind of software that's untrusted or from an unverified source.
Mm-hmm. Don't install anything you didn't specifically download yourself for a reason.
We recommend installing software from the Mac App Store using strong passwords and multi-factor authentication and using biometric authentication where possible. Users should also avoid opening links in emails, use caution whenever an app asks for permissions, and keeping devices, operating systems, and apps up to date. So, our poll of the week, it's soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Is Atomic Mac OS Stealer malware steals everything? Your choices are, I'm very careful. I'll start being more careful. Malware on a Mac? Nonsense. Going commando, baby. Max. And I don't like any of your choices, which only one person ever actually picks. So far, we've got 26 votes, and Max is in the lead. So how careful are you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, we got to train people not to believe any message that pops up on screen, because you can't trust it. But then when the real messages pop up, that something critical. Apple released a critical emergency update this week and forced it in everybody.
Right.
Haven't found out what was fixed yet, but there was a critical update that was forced in.
Right.
That it's you can't be sure if that message is real or fake. A lot of times there's ways to tell. Quite often the grammar is bad or awkward or spelling errors, because generally these bad guys aren't native English speakers, but somebody can be having a bad day when they write a real message too.
Right. And if you get an email that says, "Oh, we're Apple and we need you to do this," if it doesn't come from apple.com, It's fake.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can see where it came from. You can see where the links point to.
Right.
You can point to a link, but don't click on it, and it will pop up a little thing that says where that link is really going to. And so if it claims to be Apple.com, it should be going to Apple.com.
Right. And if it doesn't, don't click on it.
I was working with a customer this morning, and was showing her a message that came from Medicare. Medicare Plan 2023. Well, it sounds important, right? So we look at it. It's going to Amazon Web Services.
Nice.
Maybe Medicare is using Amazon Web Services.
Maybe.
Damn.
But the link was broken because it was just showing a blank square. So Amazon already found this malicious content and removed it from their server.
Right.
But, yeah.
You know, everything we're talking about now is also going to be discussed on May 11th.
Really?
Yes.
That's coming up
soon. What's happening on May 11th?
Well, shockingly, Jazz 90.1 University is having a program on the best practices to help you stay cyber safe. And that is going to be on May 11th at 6:30 p.m. Here at the Jazz 90.1 studios, actually over in the
library
there. It's $10 for members, $15 for non-members, and it's going to be presented by yours truly. So, you should come. You should absolutely go to the, here's what's more important. If you've got parents or relatives that you're always having to go over and fix their computer because they clicked on something they shouldn't have, send them to this event.
Pay the $10. It'll be well worth it.
It's well worth it. It'll save you hours and hours and hours of time. So absolutely do that. We're going to talk about malware. We're going to talk about scams. We're going to talk about Facebook cloning, which is not hacking. It's cloning and all kinds of stuff. So it's going to be a pretty interesting time. So you should definitely sign up. Tickets are still available. You can do so right at the Jazz 90.1 website. Scroll down and you'll see best practices to help you stay cyber safe, and we'll see you on May 11th.
And interestingly enough, May 10th, the day before, is the Apple Cider meeting.
Right. The 10th is Wednesday. The 11th is Thursday.
We're going to be talking about all of these AIs that are so popular, ChatGPT and Midjourney and whatnot, and why you should be concerned. If you create content, you should be concerned.
Yes. Yes. Some of it is quite useful, actually.
Yeah.
What I like about it, what I like to use it for, is as a starter.
Right.
So, if I'm going to write, best practices. You go into ChatGPT and you say, give me the 10 best practices to help me stay safe online.
Yep.
And it gives you a list of 10 things. And you go, I like this one. I like this one. This is a good starting off point for me. Boom.
Yeah.
There's been examples of kids using ChatGPT's output to plagiarize articles, and one of them that I saw posted, they left the as a machine learning algorithm. I don't have an opinion, but blah 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 blah, and the kid left that in the paper returned into the teacher.
Wow.
What was the other one that was good? Ask it for pirate websites, and I can't condone pirate websites. Then said, what website should I stay away from?
Yes.
And it listed a bunch of pirate websites.
Yep. It's
reverse engineering.
There are some, it's like anything else. There's the light side and the dark side, and you can use it to write code or to give you basic coding information, and that's kind of nice. It isn't always correct, is the real thing. One person started getting phone calls about an article she had purportedly written, and she had not written any article like that ever, but everybody who looked for that subject through ChatGPT found her. Oh, yeah, she wrote a whole paper on this. No, I didn't. I did not. So, these things are not always accurate. And
they're confidently inaccurate.
Did they find
though?
Out how they came around to?
No, because it's buried in the algorithm somewhere.
There was some report somewhere that she did this, and that gets picked up and repeated over and over and again. So she must have done
it.
And each time it's repeated, that makes it more
verifiable.
Right. So, yeah, there is a real problem with AI, but it, used in the right ways, it can be very, very helpful and very useful. And you know, they're doing chatbots for people who just want to talk to somebody.
Well, like anything else, a double-edged sword. You know, it can cut both ways.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But you should to get back to the original topic, you should be thinking at least twice before you click on something in an email. You should be thinking at least twice. You know, if somebody came up to you on the street and said, I'm from the IRS, give me money right now or we will take you to jail.
Give me iTunes cards.
Give me iTunes cards. Give me gift cards or we will take you to jail. You'd laugh and call a cop.
Yeah.
But when you get exactly that same message in email, people do it. I don't get it.
It's like I've said right along, whether it's an email or a link to a website or that, if you have to hesitate more than 5 seconds to think whether you should click on that or not, delete it.
Yep. It's the perceived safety of your home. You're in your home. Yep. You're doing something on your computer. It should be safe.
Should be safe. And it, you know, you're tired and it's been a long day and you're semi-distracted.
Or you don't read all the fine print.
And the messages are really, really panic-inducing.
Right.
You know, big red flashing light. There's warning, warning, warning. Mm-hmm. There's a virus. Don't close this window or it'll erase all your files. Oh, my God, I don't want that to happen. I better call the phone number.
Yeah.
Yep. No, these things, you've got to understand the psychology behind these things. And it's all about panic and it's all about fear. And we respond to fear. There are lots and lots and lots of people preying on your fears every single day. And so are the scammers online. You know, give us money or we'll haul you off to jail. You owe us hundreds of dollars, so send us gift cards. Nobody takes gift cards. Who takes gift cards? Nobody takes. The IRS does not take gift cards. Apple does not take gift cards. Microsoft, Google. Nobody takes gift cards. If somebody tells you they want gift cards, it's a scam. Done. Finished.
Gift cards are for gifts, not bills.
Right.
I saw a good one this week. Some show I was watching, they got called into the IRS, and they were panicked. Oh, my God, are we going to go to debtor's prison? And the IRS agent says, there's no debtor's prison anymore. Right. And they go, whew, we just send you to regular prison.
Yeah, right. Right.
Oh, that was 911.
Oh, yeah, it was. They both claimed they had a household.
That's not right.
Because each one thought the other one wasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so
I love the advice at the end. The accountant told him, you know, there's one thing you can really do for next year to make your taxes a lot easier. Oh, yeah. What's that? What's that? Get married.
Yeah. So pay attention. Also, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We don't go. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, staying on that one point, though, you know, again, it's getting into the summer months of that, and, you know, we're getting preoccupied with so much other stuff, you know, and taking the time to read that, you know, birthdays are coming up and everything else and anniversaries and graduations and all this other stuff. You know, take the time if you're getting these emails and all this other stuff. To really, like we've said, check out the links to make sure that, you know, if they're saying, oh, well, we're setting up this fund to do this or support this fund or that's going on. double check it. You know, there is still this thing called the telephone.
Yes.
Is and there? You can pick it up and call somebody, just like if they were asking you for gift cards or anything else. Hang up, you know, from that message, whether you got to restart your machine, like Nick, Steve was saying, you know, they say, don't turn it off. No, I won't turn it off. I'll unplug it.
Right.
Unplug it and have it come back up and it's gone. And then actually dial that number or call them.
Right.
I know a lot of places, you know, they don't offer phone service anymore.
Right.
You know, you just got to go to the email. But actually type in the address of that site. Don't click on some link. Actually type it in and go physically to that site. And usually within that site, there's different ways that you can contact them, whether it's leaving an email or instant, you know, there's quite
right.
often instant checking,
right.
you know, talking back and forth.
What you need to do right now, while you're listening to this show, find the email address and the phone number of your bank, and don't do it by going online. Look at something. They send you stuff all the time, and it will have an email address, and it will have a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Get it from that and keep that handy. And then if somebody calls and says there's a problem with your bank, you can call your bank directly. Not the number they send you, but your yep. real number. If you're one of those people who does your banking online, check it every day. Every day. And then, you know, you get this thing that says, oh, my God, you're overdrawing your account. Well, I'm pretty sure not, because yep. I was on it just an hour ago, and I had plenty of money.
We had a sneaky one the other day. A customer got caught by it. They let the bad guy into the computer for the first part. So the fake tech support guy gave the customer $5,000. And the fee for cleaning out the computer was only $500. So all you got to do is send us the rest back. Just give us your bank account details to send us the rest back.
Give us your bank account details.
Turns out they already had them.
Wow.
Because they watched the person log into their bank account.
Yeah.
And in the background, they took $5,000 out of savings and deposited it to checking.
Oh.
So they proved they gave them the money by having them look at their bank account. Here's a $5,000 deposit. Oh, okay. Thank you. I better give you the leftover. That's actually a big online shopping scam too. You know, on eBay and other auction sites. You know, this thing costs $100. I'll send you $500. You ship it to me and then just keep the rest, or send me back the leftover money.
Right.
It's a fake money order that comes in. So then you're out the money and you're out the stuff too.
I had one year sort of a scam like that where they were sending me all these traveler's checks.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, all right, go ahead, cash them, and then figure out how much, you know, the parts are going to cost us, and send us the parts, you keep the rest.
Yep.
Well, of course, I called my friends up over at the FBI, and they couldn't get over how, matter of fact, I think they still have a couple of them up, he said, as exhibits of how authentic
yeah.
these traveler checks
looked. Does anyone
looked.
Use traveler's checks anymore?
Right. And he goes, this is the best we've seen.
It was pre-credit card days. When I was a kid, you know, I always remember Dad going to the bank, getting traveler's checks out, and he signs it once there.
I did.
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, nowadays you just put it on your credit card.
Yeah. But back then, yeah, and they wanted me to keep the rest,
yep.
which would have been, you know, I would have been making a couple $1,000s. And
sure.
No, this smells like fish.
That's not
yeah.
right.
It smells like fish. And it was like, yeah. So
you
that's
did?
When I called my friends up at the FBI, yep. and sure enough, they came on down, and they're looking at it and that. And
wow, that
took
looks good. We did have a surprising call this week. Customers having problems getting Microsoft Office installed. You have to go through their activation link and all that mess. All right. And they said they called Microsoft and let a Microsoft support rep into their computer to see if he could fix it, and he couldn't. And we're thinking, oh, my God. But I'm going through her history. I think she actually did call the real Microsoft.
Wow. Saved that phone number.
Yeah. Because usually you go down their support site, there's a chat,
yeah,
and then they call you back.
Right.
But actually finding a phone number to call the real Microsoft, that's pretty good.
That doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they will call you. I mean, don't get us wrong, folks.
But it's initiated by you chatting with them.
Yeah.
And
they're never going to call you out of the blue.
No, and they'll call you.
Right. And they'll never call you out of the blue. Just
right. You started it, and they continue.
Right.
Just like the government or the postal service and all these other people, they do not give you personal phone calls.
Right.
It just doesn't happen.
What do you think happens? There's a bank of people sitting around doing nothing but waiting to call?
Yeah.
Someone, it's not how it works.
Apple and Microsoft have billions of customers, literally billions of customers each. How many tech support people would they have to hire to call you?
To call you. Exactly.
It's hard. People complain. You call them and you're on hold for an hour?
Yeah, right. Really.
They don't have time to call you.
Heck, just alone with the IRS, I could remember back when I had to set it up to, you know, get signed up for Social Security and all that. You get on the line with them, even within an appointment.
Right.
They call you, and then you sit on the phone for another hour.
Yep. Yeah. Here's a hint. If you call the IRS or you call Social Security, have your phone plugged in.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because, you can, you know, have them call you back. I like that service, which they did. But again, once they called me back, because that number popped back up, I was still on the phone for a good while before they got back.
That's right. Yep. That's right.
I had to call the Secret Service once. A customer wanted to use their face on a dollar bill in an advertisement, and so I wanted to find the legal requirements. It's kind of interesting. It has to be less than 50% or more than 150% actual size, and it can't be green.
Right.
But you can make fake dollar bills. But so I call the Secret Service, and I'm sort of, you know, some guy in a trench coat going to just pop out of the corner and go, "Hey, Secret Service, what can I do for you today?" It's like they probably never get any phone calls.
You get a tap on the shoulder. You were about to call the Secret Service.
Yeah, yeah. Come with me.
Yeah, it's obvious when you stop and think about it.
Yep.
But the problem is we don't stop and think about it.
And they panic you to prevent you from thinking about it.
That's exactly it. They make it, you know, they make it so dire.
People get click happy.
Yep.
Forces them to go click happy.
Yep. That's exactly right. Don't be pressured into anything.
Because, you know, they build up the anxiety and they go through these other screens without taking the time to read what they're doing. Or what they're agreeing to. Because it's like we've said before, you know, they can get you on the phone and all they have to do is say, have you say uh-huh or yes. And then, boom, they can sit there and say, well, we got them agreeing to this contract. We've got it right here. Mm-hmm. And they play your voice saying yes, even though they asked you, are you so-and-so? And you said yes. Boom, they got you.
Where they sign your name in a script font on a fake contract and submit that to the credit card company as proof.
Right. All right there.
I see you have a machine that goes ding.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. And we'll be right back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Okay. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the... No, 36 minutes after the hour. We are sound by living in past
time. Warp time.
And you can watch us in several locations.
That's true. You can. Steve does yeoman service, getting everything hooked up. We're on... What are we on?
We're on Facebook, and we're on Twitch, and we're on YouTube.
But we only do the chat on...
On our website.
Yeah, on our website, Jazz, at... soundbites.org/chat.
Because I had a couple folks ask me about, come on over to our website. Oh.
Yeah, no.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
They're talking about the Kentucky Derby in the chat. Is that today?
Yes, that's tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, they just scratched another horse. It was a 3-1 odds.
Yeah. They don't say why.
Mm-mm. No, they're...
We'll see. All right, T-Mobile. If you're a T-Mobile customer, T-Mobile on Monday said it experienced a hack that exposed account pins and other customer data in the company's second network intrusion this year and the ninth since 2018. The intrusion, which started on February 24th and lasted until March 30th, affected 836 customers, according to a notification on the website of Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry. But, of course, that's 836 customers in Maine. That doesn't say what the rest of the country got. The information obtained from each customer varied, but may have included full name, contact information, account number, and associated phone numbers, T-Mobile account PIN, social security number, government ID, date of birth, balance due, internal codes that T-Mobile uses to service customer accounts, for example, the rate plan, the feature codes, and the number of lines, the company wrote in a letter sent to affected customers. Account PINs, which customers use to swap out SIM cards and authorize other important changes to their accounts, were reset once T-Mobile discovered the breach on March 27th. The incident is the second hack to hit T-Mobile this year. It's the ninth since 2018. In January, T-Mobile said bad actors abused its application programming in a way that allowed them to access the data of 37 million customers.
And former customers, too. Right? Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The hack started on November 25th, 2022, and wasn't discovered by T-Mobile until January 5th. So they had all of December to play around.
Right in the middle of the holidays.
Yep. Data obtained in that incident included names, billing addresses, email addresses, phone numbers, date of birth, T-Mobile account numbers, and information such as the number of lines and accounts and plan features. From 2018 through 2022, T-Mobile discovered seven more hacks. In the more recent of these, reported in April of 2022, a hacker gang that goes by the name of $. Okay. Gained access to the company's internal tools and from there carried out so-called SIM swaps, a type of hack that allows unauthorized people to port someone's phone number to the phone of the threat actor instead of their own. Other data breaches include one in 2021 that exposed data belonging to 49 million customers.
Is that all?
Yeah. So, are you a T-Mobile customer? Give us a call, but not on your cell phone. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk a lot about keeping yourself safe. But the fact is, you're only half the equation. You're only about a tenth of the equation. The reality is that everybody else out there is trying to break into the people that you've already given your data to legitimately, like your phone carrier or Apple or Google or Microsoft or whoever. And it's a constant battle to keep your data safe, your banks. One of the most vulnerable are the department stores that have their own credit cards. They've got all your banking information, and most of them don't spend a lot of money on tech security. So
again, that goes back to that you got to take time and caution when you get emails or messages from these other places.
Right.
That this has been compromised or that's been compromised, because you could be innocent, but if say you're close friends with, quite a few other folks and you trust them.
Right.
But they're going click happy and going all over the place and they're getting hacked and everything else. And then you're wondering why you're getting this junk now because you're friends with them. You could be safe and doing all this stuff for the most part. But if you've got other folks that aren't due diligent in what they do and where they go and everything else, you're just as vulnerable.
And there's a new system online now called passkeys that more services are starting to support. And one of the benefits of passkeys is it doesn't use a password.
Right.
It uses the Face ID or Touch ID already built into your phone as a biometric authentication to the remote server. So your phone knows it's you, and then the phone says, yeah, I know it's him.
Right.
So the other end, it doesn't have any secrets for you to keep.
Right.
So hopefully more and more companies will start using passkeys instead of passwords. So that's the problem with passwords is they have a secret for you from you, and if they lose it, you're in trouble.
Well, that's where a lot of them too, though. You know, you'll go to log in and they'll text you
right
and, a number
and with the SIM swapping, the SIM swap and SIM jacking that Nick just talked about with the T-Mobile hack, text message codes are not safe. That it's very easy for a bad guy to get your phone number basically in a SIM, and then they receive all your messages, including those text messages.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that they've started chaining the social engineering together, that you get a fake phone call from Apple saying we're going to send you a code to authenticate that it's us. Meanwhile, they're breaking into your Apple ID, which sends a code to your trusted device. You give them the code. Now they're in. They've bypassed two-factor and they've right. logged into your account because it wasn't them to start with.
Right. It's I have gotten more than once. I've gotten an email that says, "Here's your code to log in." No, I'm not logging in anywhere.
Yep.
So why are you sending me a code?
If it happens once in a while, I think it's possible someone misspelled.
That's very possible.
Maybe there's a Nick G somewhere.
Right,
and accidentally typed Nick F.
Right, right. That's exactly right. And I understand that.
Yeah. But again and again and again and again.
Right. It doesn't happen to me too often, so it's very possible that, you know.
Could happen.
Yeah. And it's you know, it, particularly if it's a Gmail address, as Steve said, you know, if yours is close to mine and you fumble finger it, yes, mm-hmm. I absolutely get that. I do. And all you have to do at that point is just ignore them. But I also get a lot of the, here's your invoice.
Yep.
For, you know, $4,000.
Yeah.
And if this is an error, please click here.
Yeah. Oh, I better let them know I didn't order that.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to be nice.
It's nice to be nice.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's what they're, you know, again,
what
you folks have to realize is, you know, you might think you're doing due diligence and say, oh, or worried, I don't want to be charged for this. Don't worry about it.
Again, this is where you go to your bank,
mm-hmm.
you log in to your bank, and you look at your account.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get charged $4,000 for something?
Yeah.
No? Then ignore it.
Yeah, I had one about 2-3 weeks ago, saying that there was a bill, you know, for, I think it was 180 some odd bucks on PayPal. You better click on this link to PayPal to check it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I immediately deleted that, went over to my browser, typed into PayPal, used my credentials, my long password to get in. And gee, my PayPal said zero, zero owed.
Yep. Never click on those links. If you get something from PayPal or your bank or wherever, click on, go to the place itself. Don't click on the link.
Delete that message.
Right. And you'll find that 99 times out of 100, it's fake. And if it is legit, you're right there to handle it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, there's easy ways to do that. I almost got caught the other day. I was still up at 2 a.m. and I got this email that says there's a problem with your package. And I was waiting for a package.
Yep. Because most people are these days.
Yes. And I came this close to clicking. And I said, wait a minute. So I looked a lot more closely.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the FedEx sends you tracking numbers.
Yeah.
So I looked at the FedEx page for my tracking number. It was fine. No problems. Delivered that day,
mm-hmm.
2:00 a.m. So I didn't get it until 7:00 at night, but I got it that day.
Mm-hmm.
I almost got caught at 2 a.m. and so I just deleted it.
It happens. Well, I think just one of our callers there saying that he was helping out a friend because they got soaked for a major amount of money because they fell into that belief that they, you know, were literally preying on the old and putting fear into them. Well, you know, whether it's threatening them jail or that they're going to lose all this money and everything else, you know, if they don't follow their instructions and do this and do that, that's what they're preying on. And that's, you know, a small percentage. But heck, if they can get, like you said, they're going with the percentages. If they can get one or two and get $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000, they made their day.
Yep. If they get $200, they've made their day.
Oh. I've always said, and I've said, probably said it here too many times, if they tried to steal less money at once, they might get more overall in the long run.
Yep.
Yeah, taking $400, $500, $600 at a time, you're going to stop and think. But if it's $30, $50, maybe even $100 is probably that break-even point where it's
right.
A little too much. I better stop and think about spending $100.
Right.
But yeah, that take $20 from 5 million people is a lot better than trying to take $500 from 1,000 people.
That's right. You get more hits.
Yeah.
My accounting teacher at RIT, Buck Beamson. I'll never forget him, was telling me of us, telling the whole class of this scam where this, you know, because computers back then were just, you know, evolving and coming about. But this one guy in this institution had written a program and thinking on Steve's premise, he did this engineering of this program where it would go through all these accounts and just take the odd cents.
Oh, yeah. The tenths of a penny.
And take the odd cents and move that over to another account.
Yep.
And I guess they didn't find out until after he was gone, but he was living down in...
That was a plot of the first Superman movie.
Like Haiti or second something Superman. Like that.
Second one? Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And living very well. And they found out that he had literally stolen millions.
There's rounding errors. The money is there. It just doesn't show.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, if you have it's like you're buying gasoline. You know, it's 3.999 a gallon or whatever it is. Okay. So if you put that into your spreadsheet and you only have it set to two decimals, that extra nine is in there. You just don't see it.
Yep.
So if there's tenths of a penny here, hundreds of a penny there, thousands of a penny there, they don't show up. And not until you've done an awful lot of math down the line do they become significant. So if you steal them, nobody knows. And when you take a tenth of a penny from 100,000 people every hour, do your own math, you'll see that that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and he was saying, they didn't catch him until after he had retired, and he was living well, and he mentioned some islands or that.
Yep.
I read an interesting real-world example of that, and guys, so you take a cake and you cut it into three equal pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So those pieces are 0.333 each, right?
Right.
You add that up, and that's only 0.999.
Right.
Where's the rest of it? And the answer was on the knife.
Yep. It's on the knife and in crumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you take enough crumbs off enough cakes.
Yep.
And you can open a bakery.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
when you're trying to swipe cake with nobody noticing, you don't take a pie-shaped wedge out of it. You cut an inch out of the middle and then smooth the frosting back around again. I thought that cake was taller. No,
that sounds like the voice of experience right there, Steve.
And you get a lot more cake that way, too.
You get a lot more cake.
Especially if it's a layer cake.
Yeah. Right.
Take out a whole layer.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of ways that scams can happen, and you need to be prepared for them. So sign up for my cybersecurity class on May 11th at 6:30 p.m. Go to jazz901.org. Scroll down till you see the cyber security, the Jazz 90.1 University page, and go for it. They're enrolling now. There are still tickets left. I know that seems ridiculous, but there are still tickets left. So come and join us, and it'll be a good time, I think.
Yeah, there have been scams around since there have been people around.
That's exactly right.
They just keep evolving as better methods and opportunities come up.
Yeah, about 6 seconds after they invented money, they invented scams. So
yeah,
that's the way that works. And it is, look, we're not casting aspersions on anybody. It is very easy to fall prey to these things. It is very, very easy.
Especially if it's late at night or, you know, first thing in the morning.
Right.
And not quite wide awake and get into all this stuff, or they just catch you on a bad day.
Right.
Very easy, folks, you know. So you don't have to apologize for that. It happens. People, you know, have good days, bad days, but they're out there and all they're trying to do is nail that person that's having the bad day.
Yep. And a lot of people I know say, oh, I get online while I'm waiting for the coffee to brew. You're going online before coffee?
Yeah.
That's you're a brave human being.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now, or some other word that isn't brave.
What did I hear? Someone was complaining about someone who said they didn't have her coffee yet, and he said, "So you can't face the world without being drugged?" I can't face you without being drugged.
That's right. It's not for me; it's for you.
Yeah,
you're safer if I have my coffee. So there's just. It's relentless is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, like I said, if somebody walked up to you and said, hi, I'm from Apple. Go buy a bunch of gift cards and give them to me. You would laugh in their face.
Yeah.
But when it's online, you think, well, that's reasonable. It's not.
Yep.
It's not reasonable. Don't do it.
Why folks ever thought... I guess it's still beyond me.
Well, we're programmed to obey signs. We're programmed to be nice and tell someone when they're wrong. Well, no, I didn't order that. I better let them know. Or, oh my God, it says I have a virus. It's, we have to program people not to be nice anymore. And that's
right.
That's
to be so foolish, though, to think a place like the IRS or Postal Service or anything else wants gift cards. Like Target gift cards or Amazon gift cards or...
Well, it used to be money orders.
Right.
Which there's no security in. Anyone at the other end can get your money order.
It's like bearer bonds.
Yeah. But then apparently too many clerks started getting wise to money orders. And that's why they went to gift cards. So now store clerks are being trained. If someone's ordering too many gift cards, they're probably getting scammed. So we had a customer who on the phone with the scammer, they panicked her into going to Target, and they told her to get a couple $100 in gift cards and go to one line and then go back into the store, get a couple hundred more, go to a different line.
Oh, wow.
So the bad guys know about this, too, and they're training people to go to different lines so it doesn't trigger you're buying too many gift cards. But now I'm seeing at gift card kiosks in stores, you know, gift cards are for gifts. If someone wants to be paid with a gift card, you're probably being scammed.
Right.
Good.
But people don't read that.
Unless your grandkid wouldn't mind being paid to mow the lawn with a gift card.
Right, exactly.
In fact, they'd probably prefer it.
Yeah, exactly. We used to do that. We'd stuff my daughter's Christmas stockings with gift cards all the time. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
You went and bought the gift card to give to your child. That's very different from handing it to some stranger. And then you have to you get back on the phone with them, and then you read them the number. No, that's simple enough. Just no. You got lots of chances to say no. Say no
because
right from the beginning.
If you mail it to them, that's postal fraud.
Right.
And that's a lot easier to prosecute.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's an address at the other end.
And the problem is, you think to yourself, well, I've still got the gift card.
Yep.
Look,
no,
it's right here in my hand.
Yeah.
I still have it. But you don't, because you gave away the number.
It's just like your credit card. You give away the number, anyone can run up the bill.
Right. So, yeah, be aware that you should not ever pay for anything with a gift card. Because if you do, I'll guarantee you it's a scam.
Well, I can remember one year when we had the shop going. Supposedly, this one company was sending us, you know, like three different credit cards to buy these memory chips and everything else because they were doing upgrades. And like I said, it smelled like fish.
Yeah.
So I got a hold of my friend Mark, and he says, all right, tell you what, you got any, you know, and I wound up, I went along with the guy, said, all right, we'll go ahead and do it, and, you know, we'll ship it on off to you, and we got the credit card numbers. Of course, he ran the credit card numbers and knew that they were bad, but he wanted to find out where these folks were going. So what he had me do was we did up this box, and we wrapped up memory chips, these old memory chips.
Every shop has a bin full of old memory chips you can't
then
use.
Then we'd sit there and pull them out. So we taped them all up and made it look real good and shipped it on down. And it was down somewhere's down, I forget, somewhere's Florida or something like that. And evidently they tracked the whole package right down there and busted the crew.
Nice.
For the scam and that.
One of the great things I read is porch pirates who like follow delivery vans around.
Right.
Take your garbage, put it in an Amazon box, and leave it on your porch. And someone else takes it away. You don't have to pay for garbage pickup anymore.
Even better than garbage is your cat box.
Cat box, yep. Or dirty diapers.
Yep. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. I like these guys that do the glitter bombs.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Well, then that's a mess you have to clean up if they do it on your porch.
Right.
Or in
because sometimes they take the whole box away. Sometimes they slit it open to see what's in it before they take it. Because, you know, it could be diapers. It could be anything. So it's often, you know, they don't know. All right. That music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But do not go far. There is an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole another hour of sound bites. That's an hour of Dave Enright, an hour of Steve Ray, an hour of Nick Francesco, and an hour of you. So take that bio break. Take a little time for yourself. Put your feet up. Close your eyes for 10 seconds. But don't drift off because we're going to be back with a whole lot more sound bites. And you don't even have to wait. You can give us a call right now. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Get in the queue. Get ready with your question. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Ooh, it's two Apple news items this week. Apple on Monday.
That's what I was talking about earlier.
Right. Apple on Monday pushed to some iPhones and Macs its first-ever rapid security fix. This type of patch is supposed to be downloaded and applied automatically and seamlessly by the operating system to immediately protect devices from exploitation, thus avoiding the usual system update cycle that users may put off or miss and thus leave their stuff vulnerable to attack. As luck would have it, though, this first-of-its-kind patch did not go off without a hitch. Some Apple users reported problems actually getting the update. iOS Security Response 16.4.1a, failed verification because you are no longer connected to the internet, was the commonly reported failure message from the operating system, although users typically were able to apply the security patch after a try or two. Also, Apple hasn't released any notes alongside the rapid patch, nor if the update patched a vulnerability that miscreants have already found and exploited. Considering that some recent iOS and macOS updates covered 0 days that had already been exploited by snoops to deploy spyware on victims' devices, it's a good idea not to wait on installing this one latest fix, even if the installation process takes longer than it should. Rapid security responses are a new type of software release for iPhone, iPad, and Mac. They deliver important security improvements between software updates. For example, improvements to the Safari web browser, the WebKit framework stack, or other critical system libraries. They may also be used to mitigate some security issues more quickly, such as issues that might have been exploited or reported to exist in the wild. Also, Apple only pushes these quick new fixes to the latest versions of iOS, iPadOS, and macOS, beginning with iOS 16.4.1, iPadOS 16.4.1, and macOS 13.3.1. Customers with more venerable software, will have to wait for normal software updates if they get it at all. These latest fixes are supposed to be applied automatically by default, assuming they work. And once the update has been verified, it's denoted by a letter after the numbers, for example, macOS 13.3.1a. If you turn off this default setting, probably a bad idea in the long run, your device will receive the fixes when they are included in the regular OS update, which may be far too late to do you any good. So how secure are you feeling using your Mac? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
The one thing they haven't said is what it fixes.
Right, exactly.
They probably don't want to say because it be something very serious and don't want other people exploiting.
That's always how
Apple
has
been. Just to see if there's another, you know, avenue around that they could have worked on.
Apple never gives very much detail on security patches.
That's good.
Because, you know, because they don't want bad guys to know. But
yeah,
on the other side, Microsoft gives all the details you need to write an exploit.
Right.
And
right.
So Patch Tuesday is rapidly followed by Exploit Wednesday.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's long been a myth that Macs don't get viruses. I hope we've destroyed that myth years, decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, they didn't used to get many because back in the day, comparatively few people were using Macs. But Macs are quite prevalent these days. They're a victim of their own success. And because of that, there are lots and lots of viruses out there, particularly because there are still people who don't think Macs can get viruses.
Especially iPhones. They're super popular.
And so people don't protect their systems.
Yep.
They don't pay attention when they're using their systems. And therefore, they are the most vulnerable devices out there these days. Not necessarily because they're badly designed, but because the people using them aren't paying attention. What have we been saying the whole first hour? Pay attention. Pay attention to everything. You think, I don't have to. I'm on a Mac. You're wrong. You're very, very wrong. You have just as much need to be protecting your device on a Mac and in Linux and everything, every operating system.
You know, most viruses are targeted to Windows.
Right.
The bigger threat these days are the fake virus messages and the fake tech support messages that come in your browser on every platform.
Right. And we've talked about this before. I got one when I was using a Chromebook here that said there's a problem with Windows.
Yeah, you're with your Windows
click here.
Machine.
Probably not.
You think?
There may be a problem with Windows, but not
this year.
Yeah. Right. So these things are quite prevalent, and every operating system is prone to them. So whatever operating system you've got, keep it secure. And one of the things we'll talk about on Thursday is backing up. You know, one of the best ways to secure your data is to have it all backed up.
And in most cases, an offline backup.
3, 2, 1.
So if someone happens to get to your computer and ransomware encrypt all your files on your computer, they'll get the hard drive plugged into your computer too.
Right.
Or network drive your computer talks to.
Right. So we talk about the 3, 2, 1 method of backing up. Three different backups in two different places, one of which is offline. So if you are backing up to a cloud storage place and yet you are always connected to it, you still haven't got that one. You need a backup that is not connected to anything. Now, you can kind of cheat that a little if it's someplace you connect to only to back up. And the rest of the time you're not connected to it, that works. In fact, it kind of has to work that way because otherwise you aren't backing up to it.
And a lot of times the cloud backup services, they're not exactly doing a backup. They're doing a sync.
Right.
So when you make a change on your computer, that change is immediately sent to the cloud. Well, that's good. But what if the file's corrupted? That corruption is immediately sent to the cloud.
Right. That's why many of them, like pCloud, have versioning.
Yeah, if you want to find what the file looked like yesterday or last week, that's good to have.
Yep.
And when it comes to backing up, I mean, I've always been an advocate. Don't worry about backing up the programs. Back up all your data.
Right. Whether you can always reinstall the programs, unless, of course, you've stolen them, in which case, I don't care.
Which most cases, if you know, you've got a virus or that, and you're gonna have to do a deep clean, and it's going to require you resetting the computer anyways, which means if you're on a Windows machine, you've got to turn around and reinstall all that software anyways.
Right.
Because you're doing a reset. So the key thing is the documents and most important are the photos.
Right.
We cannot stress that enough.
It's very hard to go back and get photos of your new baby again.
Right, right. You can always
especially at his wedding day.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. So, talking about that, there are at least two services that are relatively unlimited. There are other services you can buy lots and lots of storage, all the storage you want. How valuable are those pictures of your relatives who have passed? You can't recreate them.
Mm-mm.
How important to you are they? If they are important, spend a buck. Say, you know, pay for the online storage. If you're already paying for Amazon Prime, because you like the movies or you want the free whatever they have for shipping and music and everything else, you also get free unlimited photo storage. Not video, but photo storage. Why are you not taking advantage of that?
Mm-hmm.
You're already paying for it. Use it. It will save you someday.
Yeah.
And you can use multiples at once. For example, my phone, every time I take a picture, it goes to Google, which because I use a Pixel phone, it gives me unlimited storage. And it also goes to Amazon Photos because they give me unlimited storage.
And I know Steve and I have both run into it during our years of service, you know, running service companies. You get occasionally folks coming in and say, my machine died and I got to get these photos back or this document. Yep. Where's your backups? Well, I meant to.
We had a customer come in this week that her computer died and she's a teacher and all her lessons plans are on it. And I need you to recover all my files. Okay, we can do that. You know, do you have a drive to put it on? Oh, yeah, I have a backup drive. Oh, great. Let's look at it. Guess when her last backup was? October 2021.
2021, there you go.
Okay, that was 538 days ago.
Right. You know what it costs to buy a thumb drive these days? It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing. And you could put your pictures on thumb drives. You could put your documents on thumb drives. You could buy a whole second hard drive to plug into the USB port for $100. Why are you not doing this?
Well, I carry my laptop everywhere.
Okay. So?
So what we say is that you rubber band the power cord for your computer to the USB cord for your backup drive, and when you plug the computer in to charge it, you also plug it in to back it up.
Right. Right. And
so at least that will be probably once a day.
Right. Well, I have seen people going on, for example, cruises. And they take a bunch of photos. Back in the day when your phone held, 50 pictures, you would take the photos and you would put them on your hard drive. Okay, now they're in two places, except you're about to erase them off your phone. But when you get home, back them up.
Mm-hmm. I took 5,000 photos on my recent vacation, including 3,000 at the air show alone.
Yep.
And I'm still weeding through them.
You're still weeding through them, but you've got them backed up somewhere.
Yep.
And that's the important thing. Back them up immediately and then weed through them later. Well, I only want X number of them. Okay. When you finally, but by saving them all now, if something drastic or horrible happens to your computer or your phone or both, you've got them somewhere, and then once you've weeded them out, then erase the backup and just back up the ones you really want. Why wouldn't you do that?
And copying the file to your backup drive and then deleting it from your main drive, it's not a backup.
It's not a backup.
It's only one copy now.
That's right.
We get that a lot. People come in, my backup drive failed. Oh, good. Then you still have your main drive. No, I put everything on here and deleted it. It's not a backup anymore.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Ouch.
Yep. So look, you've got...
So yeah, your main drive is going to fail. You're going to accidentally delete a file. It's going to get corrupted. It is going to fail. Your backup drive is going to fail, period. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Just a matter
That's
of what.
Why you have more than one.
That's exactly right. So...
The likelihood of them both failing at the same time is low, but it will happen.
But it can happen.
The other thing, too, is since people are using more and more laptops, they can be stolen.
Yep.
Or, accidentally dropped.
Right.
They're a little more expensive, but you can get a network-attached storage, a NAS drive in your home. And so the minute you get back home, your computer starts backing up over the network. You don't even have to plug anything in.
Right. The minute you turn it on.
A little bit more setup to begin with, but then it just works.
Yep.
You're covered.
Yep. And it's easy and it's fast and it's not terribly expensive compared to the fact that you now no longer have those pictures of your grandparents, of your babies, of your parents who have passed. I mean, what are those worth to you? If they're worth nothing, then don't go to Dave or Steve and say, get them back.
Yeah.
Because they weren't worth anything to you to begin with.
And the reason we stress on photos more than anything else is because, like Nick was saying, they can't be recreated. A document... Yeah, you could. You might not say it word for word or whatever, but for the most part, on a document, you can recreate the essentials.
And you probably wrote the document to give to someone. You might be able to get a copy back from them.
Yeah, but it can be recreated because that's just thoughts and doing a little research or whatever have you.
Right.
The photos, they can't go back to that minute in time when, the baby was just born or... Your son or daughter just got married, or your grandchildren just did this or that. Those moments, once you don't take the time to back them up, they're gone.
Yep. That look on the kid's face when she unwraps that thing she wanted for Christmas.
Yeah.
You can't recapture that. That's gone. That's gone now.
And that's why countless times that I ran into that, and I felt so bad for the folks, because... We do our best to get the stuff back, but when they can't be, like if you have said, Nick, they're not able to get enough time to do that, but they got time to do everything else.
That's exactly right. And, if you're going to send it to Drive Savers, it starts at $1,000. And that's just to look at the drive and say whether or not they can get the stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
So, if your photos are not worth, the $10 to buy a couple of thumb drives to put it on, I guess it's worth $1,000.
$50 for a terabyte hard drive that you back up everything onto.
Right. It's ridiculous that you're not doing that. So get that backup going. Get yourself.
Mother's Day is coming up.
Buy your mother a backup.
The mother of your children or your right. mother. I tried that with my wife
or
once.
Or just someone You're for not... whom mother is half a word.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
buy the drive. All right. We're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Jerome from Parenton, New York. Hi, Jerome. What's
up? Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi, good. You?
Okay, I have two questions. First off, in the disaster scenario of hard drives, a colleague of mine had his MacBook Air solid-state hard drive die, and he was able to get back online, but the most recent backup was 6 months old.
Yep.
I'm just curious, do you guys know of any businesses that will replace the hard drive controller chip on a 2015 MacBook Air solid state drive? I'm going to guess that the memory chips are okay, but it's just a failure of the hard drive controller.
Yeah, generally nobody does component level
repair. That's surface mount.
Many of the older model MacBook Airs had a slotted drive, and you could the SSD was in a slot, PCI Express slot, that you could remove and replace. But then everything started getting soldered to the motherboard. Now everything is actually built into the chip itself. It's a system on a chip. So the CPU, the GPU, the storage, and the RAM are all on the chip. Not even chips on the board; they're in the chip itself. So it makes it harder to repair afterwards, but it makes it really fast to run while it works.
Right.
Yeah, because the signals don't have to travel far.
Yeah.
Right.
You said it was a 2015 MacBook Air?
Yeah.
That
it has a replaceable hard solid-state drive,
right,
which I was able to do to get him back online, but it was a matter of finding out how difficult it would be to recover any of the data that he had in that six-month interval between the last backup and when the hard drive died.
Yeah, and that's usually where companies like Drive Savers come in, is that they have all those controller cards, and they can replace the controller card on the drive. And if it comes down to it, they've got an electron microscope, and they go in and literally bit by bit see if that magnet is north-south or south-north to see if it's a one or a zero.
Now, this is a solid-state drive, not a spinner.
Yeah, but there's still voltage in those cells.
Yep, okay.
Yep. So
that's a lot of electrons to have to count.
And yep. A lot of money you're going to pay to do it.
Yeah, so if it's really bad, then that can be quite expensive.
Yeah, okay. All right, second question, and since I've got Steve on the line, what is the difference between the differences between the administrative user and the standard user for the Macintosh operating system?
Basically, the administrator can install programs. They have administration rights to install programs, make changes to system settings. And one of the things I like about Windows, it's surprising, is
I never thought I'd even hear that phrase.
When you set up when you set up Windows, it creates a standard user, and you have to intentionally elevate permissions to become an administrator. On the Mac, the first user you create is the administrator. Their studies have shown that 90% of all malware can be stopped by not running as administrator. So if you make a second user and make them the administrator, and then you work in your standard user alone, that can help protect you from a lot of stuff on the internet. Because if something wants to install, it has to ask for your username and password. If you are already the administrator, some things will just install already because you're already an admin.
Interesting. Okay. So sounds like for Mac users, that would be good practice to do all your day-to-day stuff as a standard user.
For every user.
Leave the administrator for add and remove programs.
Right.
And most people don't do that very often, so you rarely will need to use the administrator account.
Okay.
But don't forget the administrator password.
Right. Well,
okay. Yeah. How about things for updates to browsers and things like that? I mean, Firefox updates, you know, every couple of weeks or LibreOffice, they do updates. Does that also going to require you to log back in as the administrator?
You don't have to log into the administrator account. In most cases, you can type the administrator name and password from your standard account. But you have to know the administrator name and password to run those updates, yes.
Okay, so it's like 1.5-factor authentication instead of 2-factor.
Sort of, yeah. Most operating systems nowadays work that way. As Steve said, Windows creates a standard user. Linux creates a standard user with admin privileges. So, again, you have to type in your password to access the admin features. So you can install new software, and it's just going to say, okay, what's your password? In the Mac case, it's what's your username of
and
the
password, yeah.
admin
of the admin
and
user.
Password.
Yep.
So it's just it's a step that keeps you safe.
Safer. Nothing is safe.
Right.
Yeah. But if you do install programs a lot, it can be annoying to have to type your password a lot. And so there's always that trade-off between convenience and security.
Okay. Yeah, so you'd probably be doing a lot of swapping of programs on a separate computer than the one you're doing actual work on or something like that.
Right. If you're a tester, then you're going to be typing in that password a lot.
And
if you're just an average user, you're rarely going to have to do that.
And on the newer Macs that have Touch ID, you can use your fingerprint now to authenticate rather than needing to type a password in many cases.
Right.
So that makes it a little bit easier, too.
Now, God help you if the fingerprint detector doesn't work.
Well, then it falls back to password. It always falls back to your password.
Okay, neat. All righty, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate the info.
Okay, yep. Thanks, Jerome.
All righty.
Yeah.
But yeah, even Windows users are standard, and you have to run as administrator when you need to. And I wish Apple would do that on the Mac. But it's been too long, I think. We're too used to being administrator. So how many support calls would they get where, I can't install my program. It says I have to be an administrator. What's that mean?
Yep. And I get that. But if you have to make a choice between convenience and safety.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose convenience, don't whine when you get hacked.
We have a lot.
That's all. It's that easy.
We have a lot of customers that don't like the password you have to type to unlock your screensaver.
Right.
And we always try to talk them out of removing that. You know, say you're at a coffee shop. You get up to refill your coffee. In 2 minutes, someone can sit down at your computer, make their own user account, and then leisurely steal all their files from the other side of the coffee shop because you're on the public Wi-Fi with them.
Right. And yeah, I get it. If you've got a computer at home, you're the only person who lives there, you don't have anybody coming over, you don't want to put a password on your desktop machine, I get that. But if you take your laptop out of the house even once, you should have a password. Yep. You should have a screen lock on it. Absolutely.
And we talked about that with phones a couple of weeks ago. The bad guys will watch you type your passcode on your phone, and then grab the phone out of your hands, and they can unlock it and change your passcode so you can't get back in.
Right.
So you should stop using a 4-digit or 6-digit passcode. Make it alphanumeric. Then you can type 6 numbers, but they don't know that.
Right. And in addition, if you have fingerprint detection, use it.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
Understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Steve from Walworth, New York on the line. What's up, Steve?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question. Our ham radio club is looking for another email service. Right now we're using Google, and it's not quite working out for us. We're looking at Proton Mail and Tutanota. I was wondering if you could recommend one. We'll have email addresses for, like, president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. And I see that we can probably afford the $50 a year to do that. Do you have any others that we could recommend? Google just, you know, with their privacy or lack thereof. And plus, we can't put more than, they've gone a two-factor, and we can't put more than one phone number in. So, like, when the president was unavailable and we wanted to check the email, the two-factor went to his phone. But we went to try and add a second phone line, and it looks like Google won't let us do that.
Interesting.
You may want to check with your web host. Many of them also offer mail service, and some people like combining services like that.
Okay, GoDaddy?
Nah, I wouldn't use GoDaddy.
Yeah, okay. That's our web server.
GoDaddy uses, a crappy version of Exchange.
That's the way to put it. Yeah. The scientific way.
Yeah. I have heard really good things about Fastmail.
Fastmail. Okay, I didn't hear of that one.
They advertise on a lot of podcasts. Haven't heard of that second one you mentioned, but did
Tutanota?
Yeah,
They're out of Germany. There was another one, I can't remember the name of it, that's out of India. The Proton Mail is out of Switzerland. So
yeah, their big thing is their end to end security for messages inside of Proton Mail.
Right. Mm-hmm. Both Proton Mail and Tutanota are well thought of. And, you know, Tutanota says it's the world's most secure email service. I don't know how you measure that, but okay.
Okay, my computer's listening to you. I typed T-U-T, because I didn't know how to spell it. Second suggestion is Tutanota.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's clearly listening to me.
Because I'm using DuckDuckGo at the moment. But I'm on the same IP address as you, and you probably just typed it, right?
Yeah. Zoho Mail is also a good one that I know of.
Okay, could you spell that one? I didn't catch it.
Z-O-H-O, Zoho.
Zoho, okay.
It's a thing called MailFence that I've heard good things about, but I don't really know much about it. Yeah, those are the ones I know of.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of others, and I don't know much about them.
Well, we're not looking for free, really, or the cheapest. But Tutanota is 50 for, you know, like the middle class, and Proton is about 47 or something. So that the club can afford. So, and we get a little bit of support with that.
Yeah.
Like, we don't get any support from Gmail. We tried going that route and never got a response.
Right.
Okay. All right, very good. We'll check those out. Two other comments there. I couldn't find the phone number listed on the soundbites.org webpage, and I was also looking for a search box somewhere where I could type in, you know, a mail server and see if this was discussed, or maybe there was a link on a previous show.
We do have a search the links page. You're right.
I see it now. It's at some important links. It's at the bottom there.
Right, okay. Right. You're right. I don't have the phone number on there. How interesting is that?
Yeah, I had to go through. I looked up Jazz, and it put me through the business thing, and it said, do you want to speak to the person live on the air right now? I said, yes.
All right.
I'll have to remember to add that. Thank you.
It's a new website, and we're still finding things we forgot.
Yeah. Okay. I just typed in Tutanota and Proton Mail, and the search didn't come up with anything. So.
Yeah. It's a new website. We haven't filled everything out yet.
There's only 190 some 188 links or whatever the number is.
122.
Yeah. We're still getting there. This is not Google. This is just things we've already talked about.
Well, I didn't want to waste your time if you discussed it like 20 minutes ago.
No, I get that. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for all you do, and I appreciate you spending your time on Saturdays.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye.
Yeah, thanks. I think you'll find things like Tutanota are good alternatives to Gmail. Some people love Google. Some people hate it. you know, you do what you want. And it's easy enough to get set up. It is not free. Whereas for companies, Google Gmail isn't free anyway. So if you prefer some alternative, then something like Tutanota is a pretty good deal. The one thing that I do like very much about Gmail is the incredibly good filtering they do of spam. They're pretty amazing at that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Francis from Webster, New York. What's up, Francis? Hello?
Nope, we lost you. Hang on a minute.
Call back, Francis.
Is it our end or his end?
Francis?
We're checking to see if he's still on the phone line. It's always,
we're going to try again.
We're overtaxing the phone system here at the school that wasn't meant for a call-in radio show.
I think Dave just fell asleep and banged his forehead on the board. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. You there, Francis?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's up?
Last week I called in. Our Dell PC couldn't recognize either of our iPhones.
Right.
And I went round and round with it, you know, trying all kinds of things, even when it started updating the BIOS and everything. And, then I plugged in an iPad we have, and it recognized the iPad, but I noticed it wasn't charging, which somebody asked about that. So then I got to wondering if there was a connection somewhere. So I unplugged everything, shut the computer off, unplugged it, opened it up. And the only thing that was really questionable in my mind was I had added a USB 3.0, two ports in the back, because it didn't come with any from Dell, and it was on a PCIe. So I just unplugged it and plugged it back in, and then unplugged a couple other things and plugged them back in. And the short answer is, now it works. And it charges.
So
excellent.
May not have been enough power coming out of that port. It can't charge the device, and it couldn't mount it either.
He didn't have it seated correctly, sounds like the problem.
Yep.
All right, excellent.
I do have a very short story that's interesting about our iPhone, my wife's iPhone. April 11th, we took it in. It wouldn't boot up in the morning. She put it on charge. The battery was really low the night before, but she got the home screen to show and everything, so she had shut it down normally. It charged all night, but in the morning it wouldn't turn on, black screen. It wouldn't be recognized by the computer at all. She took it to Apple. Short story is they hooked it up. It failed diagnostics. They said the only choice is a $400 exchange unit because they can't replace the battery in that phone for some reason. So I said, well, my wife said, let's think about it. I was ready to talk to a salesman, but she said, I don't want to make a rush decision. So on the way home, I'm thinking, maybe we could just take it to Walmart, that short store in Walmart, and get a battery in it, even if we could just have enough juice to back it up. And 20 minutes after taking it there the next day, we had a new battery in it. The phone booted up. And it's been fine ever since.
Excellent.
Do you know how old a phone it is?
It's an iPhone 11.
That should be fine. So, yeah, the batteries are not user replaceable, but they are service replaceable. But if the phone gets too old, Apple doesn't service them if they're more than 5 years old. They usually send people to us to do that. But, yeah, the batteries are replaceable. So you must, I don't know. It's a sex. I heard another wrong information from someone who said the Apple Store said that the new Macs don't come with USB ports.
No.
They don't come with USB-A.
Correct.
They don't come with a port that you can plug it into.
Yeah, they come with two or three or four USB ports, Type-C. But they're USB,
Well, they said couldn't install a battery because of the way it was manufactured. And I suspect it's because they use the double-sided side of it.
That's a standard iPhone battery replacement.
It's not water-resistant anymore.
Yeah, and then when we put the phone back together, we have to reapply that adhesive so that the phone is water resistant again.
Well, and so then we get chided in the systems now that, oh, you have a non-genuine battery. And they gave us a link and all the reasons why we should use a genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We use genuine Apple batteries in our repair shop, and we can repair all the phones. I don't know why the Apple rep told you that.
Well, so now it's working so far.
He wanted to make a sale on a new phone.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I thought. So it's an 11. That's fine. If it was like a 5 or a 6.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, I could see them saying that. But an 11, that's pretty new.
It's fairly new.
It is. I think it was 2017. Something like that. I don't know. It had to be more than that.
Well, I'm glad it ended up okay, Francis.
It ended up. But, hopefully Apple will get some feedback on this from people.
Yeah.
Kind of consider about, I want to buy their genuine batteries, even if it costs more.
Right.
But they wouldn't do it.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you said you went to the store?
Oh, yeah, we went to the store.
Yeah, sometimes we say hang up, call back, you'll get someone else, and you'll get a better answer.
You're right.
Yeah, I sent the survey in, and talked to someone, or chatted with someone at Apple about it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, go to this site and give feedback, and I typed in all the information, and it said, oh, you only can do 800 characters, so. I couldn't tell him the whole story.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks. But, thanks for the feedback. Yeah,
thank you, Francis.
Yeah, you're welcome. Maybe take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
I have to stop going to other stores because it just annoys me so much when I... Yeah, and sometimes I have to stop listening to this show.
Yeah.
When I'm editing the show for the podcast, I should have answered that better.
Right. Well, I've for the longest time back when we had computer stores, I stopped going to them because I would be hearing salespeople lying.
Yeah,
lying, and then the worst is if somebody recognizes me. And then says, hey, here's Nick. Let's ask him. Now I'm either going to say your salesman lied to you or I'm going to have to lie to you. Yeah. I don't want to be in either of those situations.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, you can have USB ports on a new Macintosh.
Right. Well, now I will say this. I bought a NUC, an Intel NUC, NUC, Next Unit of Computing. It's a little box, and you can buy them now for $50. And I bought it, and I was all ready to set it up to do some stuff on my network, and I was very excited about it. And then I realized that I had personally misread one of the specifications.
Oops.
It took HDMI mini.
Oh, I hate those.
I have... micro, and I have full.
Yep.
I did not have mini. So instead of setting it up on Thursday when it came, I had to order a new cable, an adapter, which came this morning. So maybe I'll set it up this afternoon or maybe tomorrow or maybe it'll be in another month at this point. But it really cheesed me off. It was my own mistake. I saw mini HDMI. And I thought, oh, I have that. I can see it. It's right there. No, that's the micro HDMI. And I was just
And they're not that much different in size.
No, they really
Why
aren't.
Why did they bother making them?
Right.
The micro A and mini A are the same way.
Yep. Yep. I know. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Richard?
Hi, guys. I thought I had paid Ultimate Avast, and I keep getting pop-ups that say you want to do this and you want to have that covered. So I actually reached out and touched, and I called them up, and I don't have the Avast paid version, which is $90. So I was almost ready to give them a credit card number for $90 for the Ultimate. But I was wondering, is there a better program than that? And by that, I mean cheaper, but that covers everything Ultimate does. Furthermore, I have Windows 10, and I thought I heard you guys say that Windows 10 covers everything anyways. So this is a two-part question. Thank you.
Okay. We will answer part A in Swahili and part B as an interpretive dance. Or I suppose we'll just do both in English. Okay, so Ultimate is very good. Avast Ultimate is very good.
I don't see anything called Ultimate. I see Premium and Avast One.
I'm assuming that he's talking about one, well, the $90 one.
I'm going to make sure you're really at Avast.
That's
for the first
true.
Part. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I've had the phone number stocked away for a long time. She sounded legitimate,
yep.
But...
Yeah, so yeah, Avast One is $99.99 a year, on sale now for $50.28 a year.
Avast One. She's talking Ultimate. I don't know. I'm going to go online and check.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there
but
is.
Yeah, Avast is one of the better smaller AV companies. We always like to say, you know, Norton and McAfee, they're the big companies, so the bad guys know it and will work around. They won't release malware until it can get past, you know, Norton. So Avast and what was the other one that we liked for a long time?
Yeah.
They ended up buying each other.
Right, right, right. Avast Ultimate does exist. Right now it's on sale for $70 a year, $69.99.
Okay. $69.99
a year.
So why isn't that interesting? How did...
Well, I told her I'm covering three devices, a phone, a laptop, and desktop, so it's a three-way.
Right, so that's the 10-device version, which is $79.99 a year right now.
I wonder if it covers everything that the Ultimate, she claimed, did. Four different
This is the Ultimate.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I see.
For up to 10 devices.
Right.
So I had to Google Avast Ultimate, and it find it. When I go to all through their menus... Ultimate's not one of the in the list.
Very weird.
Yes, God.
Very weird.
Okay. Part two. You guys have said that Windows 10, you're covered automatically with all kinds of coverages. Is that not as complete as the Ultimate?
Windows has their own Defender built in.
It does have the advantage of being built in, and you don't have it, an external program doesn't have to hook into the kernel. But it is not as complete as some of the third-party
programs.
It doesn't
update as often.
And it doesn't update as often as the big one.
Yeah, okay. I would rather pay the money.
Yeah, I think you'll find it to be fine. It's well thought of. It's everything. Security, privacy, everything all in one package. Anti-tracking.
Avast.
Yeah, the Avast.
Okay. Yes.
Bitdefender is also a very good... program, and they have all the same type of protection as well. They've been advertising on a lot of podcasts lately.
I have seen that online somewhere. I recognize those two words. I am a member, and I thank you guys for all that you do.
Thank you. We appreciate your membership and your support of the show. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. You should be protected. Absolutely. The question, of course, remains, what do you use? And there are so many out there. Avast is very good. We've recommended it for a long time.
AVG, that's the other one.
And AVG is the other one.
One of them bought the other.
Yeah.
I forget which way it went.
Yeah, I forget. But having something that protects you is important. There are lots of them, and many of the free ones are good, but you are essentially required to do all the work yourself. Whereas when you pay for one of these, it automates a lot of that for you, which is, of course, better because the computer is less likely to forget to do it than you are. So absolutely, if you get the chance. And, of course, we're always saying that, you know, if you can, you should pay for your software because it encourages the people who make the software to keep making the software and to make better software. So that's your reminder to pay for your software. I know, you know, look, I'm a Linux user. Everything is free. Everything is free. That's not entirely true. I pay for, you know, if something is shareware or freemium, as they call it now, I tend to pay for it. But,
Well, shareware, again, even though it is free, again, same premise. You're supporting these people so they continue, you know, if this particular software package you like, you know, just more improvements. And it's through that that keeps programmers going, because to just sit there and you find a freeware program, use it, all you're doing is siphoning off, you know, that guy's knowledge and not encouraging him to keep the program going, doing updates and everything else. Yeah. And
sometimes when they don't even ask for money, I send them a few bucks.
Yeah.
Sure, why? And look, I get it. You know, some people are not in a position to do that. I get that. Most of you pretend you're not in a position to do that, but you really are. And you know you are. I don't know who you think you're fooling because you're talking to yourself, but okay. But if you have the opportunity, if you have the chance, pay for some software. I can't tell you how many times I have asked a company, you know, can you add this feature or can you explain this thing? And I get a personalized response. Thank you for being a customer. They, you know, they look you up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They thank you for being a customer. Here's your answer. Or that's a great idea. We'll institute that. I've gotten an email back that said, we just put it in beta. Would you mind being a tester? No, not at all. Happy to do it.
Yeah. I had a guy, just a small program that I use, but I find it very useful for me. And I sent him $10. And it's like, all of a sudden I get to speak. Oh, thank you very much for your support. You know, I really appreciate, you know, hey, dude, it was only $10, you know, but right. I like the program and keep up the good work. And he says, well, I will.
I'm like everybody else. If I have a chance to use a free program, I will. But if I find myself using it over and over and over again, and I find it being actually useful to me, I will throw them some money.
Yep, same here.
I remember needing to call tech support for a program I was working on. We were trying to integrate it into something else, and hey, this is Scott. Scott, the Scott that wrote the program? Yeah, what can I help you with? Yes. Yes. I need to know how to do this. Oh, yeah, you just do this and this. Oh, great. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Very nice. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you know, most of these are small businesses, and we all talk about supporting small businesses because of how important that is, but
most of them, it's not their day job. It's a side job.
Well, exactly. They'd love it to be their day job, but you know, they're not making any money at it. So throw them a few bucks. It doesn't hurt anybody, and it makes you happy. So why not do it?
Especially like Steve was saying, though, if you run into an issue, you know, and can't figure something out, they're more apt to help you out versus somebody that's a non-paying person.
I've had that happen. Yeah. You know, a guy fixed the thing for me. I said, that's really fast. He said, well, I moved you to the front of the queue. You're a donor. I said, oh, yeah. Okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I didn't expect it, but I'm happy to take it.
Yep.
All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. It was great. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't forget to sign up for the best practices to help you stay cyber safe. It's this Thursday at 6:30 p.m. here at Jazz 90.1. You can sign up online at jazz901.org. It's the Jazz 90.1 University. It's going to be a fun time. It's going to be a really interesting hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever the heck it goes, and we'll be having fun. So join us there, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?